Time for another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we welcome back Ed Lyon to the microphone. He is the director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, located on the UW-Madison campus. Ed was formerly executive director of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, director of education for Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. He also runs his own consulting business, Spellbound Garden Writing and Consulting. So, spellboundgarden.com, the place to go for that. Really pleased to have him with us today to talk about the garden, what's going on out there. The Allen Centennial Gardens is celebrating its 20th birthday this year. Welcome, Ed, by the way. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
What's the mission of the gardens, and what's your vision for them?
Our primary mission for the gardens is to serve as an outdoor classroom. And obviously, being on campus, that would mean students of horticulture, botany, and related fields of study, but also for other students as well, art, music. Mm-hmm. But we also consider ourselves an outdoor classroom for the public, for the green industry, anybody that wants to learn about horticulture, gardening, and related topics.
Yeah, it's a beautiful garden. It's set, there's so many different kinds of things to see in that garden.
That's correct. And you asked about the vision, and one of the things that I'm trying to do within the next 20 years is to make us even more of an outdoor classroom. And so some of the changes that you might see happening in the next year or so really will revolve around how can we make this even more informative, more educational with an extremely limited staff. Yeah. There's just not enough people to be out there in person to always answer questions. So we're finding different ways to do that.
Well, callers online to visit with you, and let's go to Lee in Cudahy first. Lee, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. My first one is I have peonies that just finished blooming, and I have these three, they look like seed pods at the end of the stem.
They are.
How do I take them off, or when's a good time, and how do I plant them?
Well, I'm not sure about planting, how well they'll germinate for you. And even if they do, it's going to take you a very, very long time to get a peony from seed. If that's something that you'd like to experiment with, certainly go ahead and try. But I think most people will find it already takes just, if you go out and buy a brand new peony, it takes so many years for it to develop size that you're going to be waiting a long time. But I do cut my seed pods off, and I do that, well, pretty much about, I've just have done that. We've done that in our gardens. And all you do is just go down the stem from the seed pod to a leaf axle, cut just above that leaf axle. Mm. And then dispose of the seed pods. If you're going to grow them from seed, you're going to want to let them stay on there until the seeds actually dry, however. Now, and I will say I have no experience at trying them from seed and what kind of results you might have. Like I said, it'll take a while for you to get a peony plant out of them.
Oh, okay. Thank you. My other question is about I have a sump pump that I have draining into like a rock garden. Is that, first of all, is if you could talk maybe a little bit about rain gardens, and is that water from the sump pump safe to water my other plants? That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, it shouldn't harm your plants in any way. And those areas are interesting. That is what we would call a rain garden. What makes those rather unique conditions is area times of the year, particularly in the spring, you're going to have a lot of excess water in that area. But come summer, it's going to dry up and be extremely dry. The very best plants then to use in what we call a rain garden are, believe it or not, a lot of our Midwest native plants. It's interesting, rain gardens started on the East and West Coast, but the plants that do the best are our deep-rooted Midwest plants. So an awful lot of our sort of what we call prairie plants, especially more of our shorter prairie plants for the homeowner, thrive very well. They'll manage that water when you have excess in the spring, but then can tolerate that drying out when we get into the heat of the summer.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling, Lee. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Joe in Galena, Illinois. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my question. I have not much space, and I planted pole beans, and they're doing beautifully. They look great. They're coming up the pole, and they're doing very well. But suddenly, some of the leaves are starting to have black sections, and they're folding up and just drying up. The rest of the plant looks green and lovely, but there are these little individual beans that are, or leaves, that are just destroying themselves, and I can't find an insect that's on it. I don't know what it is.
If they're black and drying up, that's not an insect. That's probably disease. And we are going to, especially coming up, we've already started, and we're going to be seeing a lot of disease issues this year, and many of them fungal in nature. We've already seen the maples covered in anthracnose this year. My pulmonarias have powdery mildew. It's because of the moist conditions that we have, and now all of a sudden we've gone into this really, really warm conditions, fungal issues are going to take off. Now you have several options. You can use a fungicide. That's not going to be a curative, but it will help prevent more fungal issues. However, if you don't want to use anything that would be categorized as a pesticide, I would watch if it dries out and we get hotter weather, it'll probably stop, but definitely dispose of any of the dead leaves that drop off, because the spores from the fungal problem, they're going to keep regenerating more problems for you.
Oh, okay. The other thing is I have a hosta that's fairly close to that green bean plant, and I'm wondering, the hosta has a white, the leaf of the hosta has an absolutely white spot on it. Is that the same type of thing?
It might be, but not likely. Hostas are a lot more resistant to fungal issues.
All right.
Is it just a white coloration in the leaf?
It's like it's had a spot of bleach on it. You know, it's
And there's just one?
No, there was one leaf there, and then there was another one down a ways from that that had a similar thing, and the leaf is sort of drying, curling a little bit, and I thought, well, maybe that's the same type of...
Yeah, it won't be the same fungus, and hopefully you don't have southern leaf blight. We've seen that hitting hostas here recently, and that is a fungus that does attack hostas, and it will start with sort of some holes and some necrosis in the leaves, and then the leaves do end up drying up. Hostas used to be sort of our bastions of having no problems whatsoever, and recently now we start seeing more disease and insect issues in this area. If you really want to check it out and see what you have, I would certainly take off a leaf that has a spot on it. Make sure you take the whole leaf
so you've got
good tissue too, and get it into a plant pathology lab and have them test it for you. They can tell you exactly what it is then for minimal cost, and then how to treat it if it is a fungal issue.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for calling. Kind of along those same lines, Peter in Ashland emailed, wonders about his viburnum bushes, which have leaves that have been abnormally curled and withered. There's some white powdery material along the leaf veins.
Certain viburnums are highly susceptible to powdery mildew.
Yeah.
So if it's white powder on it, it's very likely
mildew.
It's powdery mildew. Unfortunately, an awful lot of our species of viburnum are also being attacked by, there's a weevil that's now attacking viburnums. There are several disease issues that have come into the viburnums. Not knowing exactly which viburnum he has, again, I would highly recommend cut off a piece of the branch that has both living and diseased tissue. Get it into your probably cooperative extension, and they can get it into a plant pathology lab for you and accurately diagnose what you have and help you with that.
Mike in Madison, it's your turn now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
Last fall, I collected a few beautiful-looking chestnuts. I put them in the freezer. This spring, I filed a thin spot on the shell and planted them. Did I do it right?
I'm afraid that's out of my area of expertise. I'm not sure how to properly propagate a chestnut. If you're in Madison, I would certainly check with the UW Arboretum. Those folks out there probably would have a better idea than I do on propagating them. Also, Dr. Laura Jull on the UW campus could probably help you with that as well. I've never tried to do chestnuts myself.
It sounds right, though. Freezing them and then scarring them.
Yeah, you're getting your stratification and scarification. Yeah. And I can't tell you off the top of my head. There are books that will tell you each different kind of seed, what is the proper mechanism for getting them to germinate.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. See, maybe I can help this other guy out. What I do with my walnuts is I put them in one empty butter container, put 2-3 of them in, put some dirt in, cover it, put them in the freezer, leave them in there for about a month, take them out for a week, then put them back in the freezer again, and then rough them up a little bit, and then plant them. I guess it's got to be something like changing of the season. Sometimes it'll take 1 or 2 years for these things to develop. Now, I'm not a professional, so I may not be doing it the right way, but it seems to work.
Yeah, and your cold, what you're doing with those cold temperatures is called stratification, yeah. And every plant has a certain amount of time that is required for that stratification, and you want to be within that time frame. Some will take require longer time than others do, mm-hmm. But that is what you're doing. You're mimicking winter is yep. what you're doing.
I have a question about flowers now.
Okay.
I have irises, peonies, daylilies, and Easter lilies. The irises are pretty much gone right now. The peonies are pretty much gone. But my daylilies and Easter lilies, my Easter lilies are just beautiful. Oh, they're just gorgeous. And I want to use them for cut flowers, which I already went ahead and cut without asking what I was doing right or wrong. Is there a proper way of cutting these flowers so I won't hurt the growth for next year?
No, nope, you're not going to hurt the plants at all by going down the flower scape and cutting off a stalk of flowers. One of the things that I do, if these are lilies that are coming back every year, then they're not the true Easter lily. You probably have Asiatic lilies.
Yeah, it could be. They're yellow, orange. I got yellow, orange, red.
Yeah, those are perennial Asiatic lilies. One of the things that I will do that extends the time of bloom once you have them in the water is remove the ends of the anthers that have the pollen on them.
I see them right there. I got
mm-hmm.
and be
aware, they stain, so be careful.
Okay.
But if you remove them, they actually last longer as cut flowers. But again, you're not harming those plants at all by cutting off the scapes and then taking them inside and enjoying them inside
I tell you, I had a living room, bedroom, bathroom.
That's wonderful.
And it didn't cost me a whole lot of money.
No, and you can't beat the lilies for bringing fragrance inside. I have a great big container of them right now on my kitchen.
And yep. I took some of my catalpa, the flowers off of the catalpa. Those things, to me, they smell beautifully. You know, it just, well, thanks a lot. It makes me feel a lot better.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, our guest today. Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. Give us a call with your questions. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty fast here at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with my guest Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Garden. Ed, we had a caller wondering about apple scab, not so much for the apple tree. She understands it's apple scab, but the leaves are coming off the apple tree right now and landing in among the hostas and the other flowers. Will apple scab, will those leaves create an issue?
They won't for the other plants that they're landing on, if that's what she's concerned
yeah.
about. But they will create an issue if they stay on the ground. They will continue to propagate the spores of apple scab. So she'll continue to have the problem with the tree that they're coming from in the first place. And always some of the, we try to steer people towards as much cultural control of these disease issues as we can. As I've already mentioned, this is going to be a bad year for a yeah. lot of those fungal issues. And I know it's difficult when they're landing down in perennials, but as much as you can remove those leaves and get them out of there, they're harboring spores that can live a very, very long time. And then again, you get these same kinds of conditions, and you're just back to the same problem all over again.
John and De Pere, we turn to you now. Hi, John.
Hi. I got a young maple tree. It was planted maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and it's maybe 8 to 10 feet tall. And on the leaves, a lot of the lower leaves, it's got these like little red polyps on it. I don't know if that's some sort of fungal issue, or is that really going to damage the longevity, the life of the tree, or
what kind of maple is it? Is it Norway sugar?
I think it's just a sugar maple.
Okay. It sounds to me like it might be a gall, and if that's the case, it's not going to
harm the tree.
It's in the leaves, and once those leaves drop, you should be fine. Maples usually don't get that as much as maybe some other trees, but by not seeing it, that would be my most likely conclusion, is it's a gall, and again, it won't hurt the overall health of the tree.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Carolyn Oconomowoc, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a butterfly bush that has bloomed already, and it looks kind of sickly. The leaves are turning yellow, and the buds, the blooms are dry. I bought it at a nursery, and I was wondering what to do with it. Do I cut it back, take the blooms off, the spent blooms, or what?
My first impression, again, not seeing the plant, is it's got about maybe too much water to its root system. And you may have some type of a root rot disease in there. We're seeing a large amount of root rot this year. In fact, we lost a tree right in Allen Centennial Gardens. It's our native leatherwood. It's been in the gardens for over 10 years. Spectacular tree. And suddenly just started wilting, and we lost it within a week's time. Soil root diseases are insidious. And once they start, it's usually you will not save that plant. With the wilting, that it doesn't look like you're putting plenty of water to it, but it still wilts up on you. That's usually indicative of actually you're making the problem even worse, because you're feeding it water. And really, once a root rot starts like that, there's very little that you'll probably be able to do to stop it. And I know that's bad news and not what you want to hear. But then what I would do is, when you do lose that plant, is make sure then that the whatever you replace in there, that you don't have heavy soils. Maybe you might have to amend the soils for the new plant that you put in, so that you don't have those same issues. And again, a year when we have so much moisture in the ground, particularly if you have heavy soils, we see a lot more of these root diseases.
All right.
All right, one more question, if I could.
Okay.
Hydrangea with black leaves, is that what you were talking about previously?
It sounds, again, full like a fungal issue. Yep.
And you just have to get rid of all those leaves. I didn't hear all of it because I was waiting. But
yeah, dispose of all of the leaves. That,
okay.
And also, if it's a hydrangea, then I would probably likely get a fungicide. Again, as I said, it's not a curative, but you'll want to apply it every 7 to 10 days. It at least helps stop the process from continuing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Carol, for calling. And on to Jim in West Allis. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I have some Siberian iris that have been in for years, and they're getting these large rings. In other words, they're expanding. I need to split the plant. When is the best time to do that?
Well,
Siberian iris. They just finished flowering.
Yeah. Most of the time we tell people ideal for most perennials is spring. Yeah. You divide them. You're going to have the moisture of spring that they're then going to be able to set their new roots. Certainly, you can also divide them in the fall. You could divide them now if you really wanted to, but you have to realize that what's going to happen is the heat that we're having is going to really stress them. So personally, what I would do is I'd wait until fall. Siberian iris do divide relatively easy. They're shallow rooted. You'll be able to probably dig them up as entire clumps, separate out those clumps, sort of late August into September. You won't be stressing them nearly as much because of the heat.
All right. Thanks, Jim, for calling. And Tad in Ontario, your turn. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I have a Asiatic lily question, too. We put in a little lily garden and daylily garden with some Asiatic lilies in there, and they're all stunted. We have about three or four plants. Only one is in bloom. In Ontario, we seem to be about a week behind everybody else in the area, and our plants are just coming into blossom right now, but only one has buds on it, and the others are very short with no buds. Is the soil too moist?
Moisture, I don't think, would be a big problem for Asiatics. My first thought is how much shade are they getting?
Oh, not much.
Okay, so it's full sun. Then I would think maybe it might be more nutritional. Especially if they're stunted. I would probably, ideally, do a soil sample. Find out if you're missing either a major nutrient or maybe a micronutrient that these bulbs are. It sounds to me, anytime you have stunting like that, it tends to be more nutritional. So
okay.
It might be a fertility issue.
Yep. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Adele in Brookfield, on to you now. Hi, Adele.
Hi, kind of a different question. We have hundreds of cottonwood trees around us now that are just bedding this cotton.
Yep.
And one question is, what's a suggestion of how to handle it? Second is, could we use some of that cotton in this mulch container that we have? Would it be good for that?
Well, if you want more cottonwoods, you're going to, if you use them in mulch, you're risking they're going to germinate on you and you'll have to deal with them in that way. In fact, rotary gardens where I used to work, the major trees in that garden are cottonwoods. And I'll tell you what our solution was is once they drop and start germinating is we had lots of volunteers going in and pulling them. There really isn't any other real recourse. I garden under silver maples, and I do the same thing with silver maple seedlings. It's all part of the gardening process.
The good thing about cottonwoods is that when they're sending those cotton balls out, you know that it's time to start fishing for bluegill.
Ah, there you go.
The bluegill fishing is at its best during that period. So if you're a fisher person, Adele, get out there and fish for bluegill. Thanks for calling. You can join in too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Barb in Wausau up next. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I just have a question about peonies that have flowers on them, but the petals are turning brown on the outside of the petals.
It's probably foliar or fungal, as we've been already talking with other plants. Again, peonies are subject to fungal diseases as well. Are they mature? Are they crowded together?
They're mature, but they're not crowded.
Okay. Again, getting good air circulation around plants. We really, basically, what we need to do right now is dry up, sort of heat without the humidity. And as long as we have this heat and humidity, it just is going to continually propagate these fungal issues that we have. Again, get rid of the dead and dying tissue. Dispose of it so that you don't have the spores to continue this. But that's probably the most likely thing that's happening. Again, if you really want to know 100% what's happening, get some of that tissue into a pathology lab.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. A couple of emails, one from Connie in Kewaskum. She says, now that my tulips are all brown. I'd like to dig the bulbs and replant them in fall. How do I store them? Is a cool basement okay, or should I put them in a refrigerator? And should they dry for a while before storing them?
Definitely. In fact, we've dug both daffodils and tulips out of our beds this year. And what we did is exactly what you're suggesting. We put them in paper bags. Make sure it's paper and not plastic. That'll hold in moisture. We put them down in the basement. We let them dry out fully. Some of the nutrition in that vegetation is still going into the bulb as they dry out. And you'll find that that vegetation will dry right off those bulbs. Don't cool them. Don't put them in a refrigerator, because you're fooling them into thinking it's winter. So when you do plant them in the fall, they might actually try to bloom on you. We're actually replanting ours right now. Again, they are bulbs, so they certainly can go into the ground now. But you can hold them over, make sure they're good and dry, and hold them until fall and plant them in the fall as well. But don't cool them.
Carrie in Rock County got a poinsettia as a gift last December. Still in great shape in her office. Almost all the red leaves are gone, but it's now big, bushy, and green, and she's wondering, can it be planted outside? If I keep it inside, how do I get it to turn red again for the holidays?
And kudos for having one still looking good. Yeah. We'll call you a master gardener, because they don't do very well. And I usually advise people throw it away and get one next year. But certainly you have a nice plant. It can be planted outdoors. Make sure that when you make that transition that you kind of sit it out in a shaded area for maybe a week or so. You don't want to plant it right out in full sun. It's going to shock the system a great deal. And also then you're going to want to bring it in the fall. It cannot have any frost. So when you bring it in, another thing to be aware of, you may be bringing in insects and other problems. So you might want to spray it with a soap, insecticide, something of that nature. Today's poinsettias do not need the same daylight requirements that we used to have to force into color. So if you bring it into the fall, it may go into color on its own.
Oh, wonderful. Joe and Nina, we turn to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a October Glory maple that's about 12 feet tall. We just put it in last fall, and the leaves grew to about half their regular size and then started browning over. Am I losing the tree, or is it something that that I just need to wait out?
To what degree in the tree are they? Is this happening all over the canopy of the tree, or specific areas? Is it?
No, it's on every single branch.
Okay.
I have at least 60% to 80% of the leaves.
All right, and is it browning on the leaves, sort of in spots and blotches, and then gets necrotic and literally dries up and dies?
Yes, and we're at the point where they're just starting to reach the end of the leaf and into the stem portion, but it's curling. It's not even the nice color that you'd get from a fall change. This is dark brown, and it's all curling up into the leaf.
Yeah, it sounds like anthracnose, and the maples have been hit very, very hard this year. I live on Main Street, Oregon, and every single maple up and down the street is full of anthracnose.
Okay.
As I mentioned before, I have two silver maples in my front yard, and they were literally dropping leaves like it was fall. That's how necrotic those leaves got. So this is a young tree. You want to protect it, and it's small enough that you can spray it with a fungicide. Again, the same suggestion we've been saying to everybody, get rid of all those leaves that are dropping. They contain spores that will continue on. Get them out of there. Start spraying it with a fungicide every 7 to 10 days. Again, it's not going to cure what you have, but it helps prevent further spread of that fungus.
Okay.
Maples are particularly subject to anthracnose, and they'll get them in years like we have this year. Next year, we could have a really nice sort of hot, dry condition, and you won't see it at all. So it's dependent on our weather.
All right.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Kate and Phillips, your turn. Hi, Kate.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I'm just making a comment on a previous caller regarding the lilies together, and I don't have a source of knowing which is which, but years ago a fellow gardener told me not to mix Asiatic lilies with day or tigers because one of them casts some kind of a disease onto the other bulb, and I can't tell you which it is, but that they were one will kill the other off, apparently, so that is a possibility as well.
There are certain plants that will put out inhibitors that will restrict other plants from growing. Obviously, our black walnuts are
right.
One of
yeah.
the big ones that do that. I'm not sure. That might be something worth looking into. I don't know.
Wow, that's an interesting one. Thanks, Kate.
You bet. Thank you.
Yeah, it's worth looking at. Jackie in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about bluebells. My husband and I dug up the side yard this year after a new fence was put in, and we had a plan for lots of native to Wisconsin plants that we purchased and put in. Everything seems to be thriving. We also did a soil analysis with the extension because we wanted to make sure before we made this investment, you know, that the soil was in good shape and everything was fine. But all the bluebells seem to be dying.
Yep, and they're not dying. Bluebells are ephemeral. And what that means is that many of our woodland plants will actually, the vegetation will literally dry up and disappear. The reason being that they're indigenous to woodlands where it's going to get, they come out when there's still sun coming through. There's no leaves on the trees, but it's going to get extremely dark. And they know that they can't survive. There's not enough light for chlorophyll. So they will literally dry up, and it's what we call ephemeral, and they'll disappear all summer long.
Leave them alone.
Yep,
leave them alone.
The
okay.
big challenge there is remembering that you have the Virginia bluebells there and that you don't think that it's a big empty spot and you dig it up and plant something else.
Okay, right. Well, we do have this plan our friend, the botanist, did for us. So we're going to keep the plan, and we tried to follow it. So that's good to know because we were so depressed. My husband worked for many hours, and it's looking lovely with the cranesbill and the asters and the prairie smoke and the prairie drop seed and
actually
pink onion. It's great fun, a whole new vocabulary for us.
Actually, my bluebells dried up probably a good 2-3 weeks ago, so you're fine.
Okay. Thanks so much. That's good to know.
Yep. Thanks, Jackie, for calling. Hildy asks about a 5-foot ginkgo tree. Here's another one where the leaves are rolling up, looking fairly dry. Will the tree send out reserve buds for new leaves? And any suggestions for
Yeah, ginkgos are pretty good at having secondary flushes if they lose leaves. You know, all of these diseases, and there can be insect issues as well. We're seeing a lot of insect problems this year. And so that is going to be an issue. When these trees do drop their leaves, are they going to put out another flush of leaves? And ginkgos are pretty good at doing that. Again, if you let the problem get to such a degree that you're really losing a lot of leaves, you're putting that tree under an awful lot of stress. The interesting thing is anytime we analyze when somebody loses a tree, they think that whatever the very last thing was that was on that tree is what killed it. Keep in mind, most of the time that trees die, it's a result of a series of things that have hit that tree and weakened it. And each time, that just makes the tree weaker to combat what the next issue is. And so we have to keep watching our trees and maintaining their health. Because one instance may not be what has done that tree, and it's letting it get to a stage where it's dropped all of its leaves. Next year it gets another issue, and then down the line that you'll eventually lose the tree.
Phyllis in Ewan, Michigan, we are on to you now. Hi, Phyllis.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two peonies that I planted 6 or 7 years ago, and they have never blossomed. The plants get larger, taller each year, but they do not bloom. What am I doing wrong?
First off, are they getting full sun?
Full sun.
Okay.
All day.
Then again, my first thought is possibly fertility. A peony, when you transplant, they will pout for a number of years on you. They do not like to have their root systems disturbed. And they can sit for at least 2 or 3 years before they really start growing and getting out of that, what I call a pout. But it sounds like you've had yours in long enough. There's an issue beyond that. So my first thought would be check fertility, see if there's maybe a micronutrient that they might need. Again, maybe you're over-fertilizing
with
nitrogen.
Could be too much nitrogen.
Yeah. We tend to use a lot of products that are very, very heavy in nitrogen, which stimulates vegetative growth, not realizing if we do that, we're doing that at the expense of flower. So you might try putting on something with a very high phosphorus. That stimulates bloom. That's your middle number, the P in the NPK.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kane in Oconomowoc, on to you now. Hi.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
3 years ago, I spaded a couple trees into my yard. I got a clump birch and a maple. I'd like to maximize growth. I don't know if I should, drip irrigation, pretty much whatever it takes to really stimulate growth on these trees so that I can mature them as fast as possible.
Yeah, the best thing to do is make sure they're getting adequate moisture. When I plant trees, I fertilize them the first year, and then I don't fertilize them at all again. And the reason being is we want to stimulate those plants to put down good, deep root systems. So if we're doing an awful lot of fertility, they're not going to put down good, deep roots because you're providing all that in the top of the soil. I know all of us, in order to get lots of growth, we'd love to throw fertilizer out there and really stimulate that growth. But it also makes them grow faster. They're probably a weaker plant as a result as well as they stretch with that. The biggest problem that we have is once we put trees in the ground, we think, oh, we water them good 1 year, and because they turn into these mature trees, we forget the water. And the single biggest thing that we can do is when we get into the dryness of the summers, make sure that we're augmenting the water on those plants just as much as we do our perennials and our annuals. And again, then it's up to the quality of the soils that you've got them planted in, but that's probably the best possible thing that you can do.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ed Lyon, our guest, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ed Lyon, our guest today, answering your gardening questions, and lots of callers online. Give us a call. We have one open line, I think, at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Louise and Holcomb up next. Hi, Louise.
Hi, good afternoon. Not quite yet, but I have two salvia plants. Beautifully, they're white and they've been blossoming very nicely. One morning I came out and they were flopped down on the ground and the middle is staring at me and it looks terrible. What should I do with those?
Is this annual salvia or perennial salvia?
Perennial.
Okay. And so the flowers were flopped down. They're not broken off. They're just flopped?
They're just flopped wide open, yeah, or laying right down on the ground.
And what does the rosette of vegetation look like?
It looks healthy. It looks very, very healthy. The flowers, it looks to me like it just got too big.
Well, that could be. One of the issues we find is people tend to be overly generous to their perennials with fertilizer. And again, in my own garden, if I use any fertilizer at all, it's a really low-grade time release. And you could have done that. Salvias, like their soil's a little on the thinner side, drier. Moisture is another thing. If your ground is overly moist, those flowers are not, the plant itself is not going to like that. They like it very hot and dry. So it could be a combination of the two as well. But if you're doing too much fertilizer with a lot of nitrogen, it's going to stimulate those cells to elongate, grow too fast, and create weak stems on the flowers.
That's what happened. Plus, they do get plenty of water as well. They're right by my hose, so they get... would you suggest I pull them up and secure them with a string or something? Or
yeah,
should...
you know, get yourself a bamboo pole or something of that nature so that you do have the flowers for this year.
Yeah.
But I would certainly say that's indicative in that bed. Don't do any more fertilization, especially with the inorganic fertilizers with high nitrogen. It sounds like you're stretching your plants out. And again, we just discussed the fact that we want to create deep roots. Fertilizer is another problem. We're putting all these inorganic fertilizers on our plants. They're not going to put roots down looking for fertility because you've put it all right up there where it's easy access. So if we're holding back on fertilizer, they're going to put roots down deeper and deeper looking for that fertility, and you end up with a stronger plant and one that overwinters better as a result.
Makes sense to me. I will do that in the future. Thank you very much for your help.
Yep. Thanks for calling, Louise. Peggy in Milwaukee. On to you now. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem with anthills in my lawn. And they're getting bigger and bigger, and I have tried different things on them, but they stopped making the one product that did a pretty good job at treating it. And
Neodiazinon.
I'd like to do something a little bit more organic if I could.
Yeah, and that's a good idea. Most of the pesticides that we use to get rid of ants, and there are still some out there, they do tend to be a little more on the toxic side. And I can understand where hills in the yard are something that you don't want. I have a real problem with putting any chemicals out killing insects. Even the ants are turning over your soil. They're beneficial to your soils. They're aerating your soils. But I can also understand, you know, when they're biting and such. I've had pretty good luck with getting gypsum, which is a mineral that's extremely dry. And I will take and put the gypsum over the top of the hills. And it really creates an environment that the ants do not like, and then they will generally relocate. Now, I'm not going to tell you they won't relocate to another area of your yard, but that is one thing that I have done that's non-chemical.
Okay. And can you spell it for me?
Gypsum is G-Y-P-S-U-M.
Okay.
And you can buy it bagged in probably almost any garden center.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that. There were all different products. I was overwhelmed, so I thought I would call.
Okay.
Diatomaceous earth, any of these sort of products that sort of dry things out. The ants really don't like to deal with that when it's on their hill.
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds good. If they weren't quite so big, I wouldn't mind. But some of them are, 2 to 3 feet in diameter.
Oh, that's a pretty big hill.
That's a pretty big hill.
Rather get it under control.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. And let's see, is a good idea to prune plants? This is from Jim on email. Prune plants back this time of year, and if so, how much pruning can or should be done? Also, I have a type of ornamental crab tree of some sort that's been shedding its leaves around for the past couple of years.
Yeah, I'm assuming he's talking trees and shrubs.
Yeah.
He doesn't specify. The only trees and shrubs, well, again, it's probably good for every tree and shrub you have out there, research it and see when the proper time is, because there are different times that are ideal for different plants. Anything that's a spring flowering tree or shrub, you're going to want to prune off those flowers if you're pruning them back immediately after flowering, because those plants tend to set their bud after they've flowered. So if you're waiting until fall, lilacs are a great example. If you wait till fall, they've already set the bud for next year, the flower bud, and you're going to lose it. Then there are certain trees that we do want to prune maybe this time of year. But most of them we avoid, because what you're doing is you're opening up wounds for insects to transmit diseases. So again, there's no hard set rule with talking generalized.
Yeah.
You really have to look at the specific trees and shrubs that you're looking to prune. My mom could never keep straight which one. So I actually sat down in the different trees and shrubs that she had in her yard. I'd make a list for her and sort of a calendar and say, this is when you prune this one and this. So for your own yard, that's a great thing to do. Research what you have in the yard, make up a calendar that you can refer to every year, and then you'll know.
Scott in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hello. I have a question about an oak tree. It's a red oak.
Okay.
It's 15 years old or so, and it's just doing great, but two things about it. One, it's never produced any acorns. I don't know if some do and some don't. And then the second thing is, this year I noticed on the trunk that there, it looks like someone took a drill and just sort of drilled holes, like kind of along a very straight line in several places on the trunk.
That's a sap sucker.
That's a sap sucker. Okay.
They generally, I haven't really seen them. Red oak doesn't isn't usually their plant of choice. They love Austrian pines. But if they're in a straight line and they look like somebody took a drill, that's a sap sucker.
Okay. Is that going to hurt the tree?
Ultimately, it could, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, most of the time that the sapsuckers actually come through twice a year for us, once on their way south and once on their way north. And the problem is they find a tree that they really like, they'll always return to that tree.
Okay.
So that means continual damage. And as I mentioned before, every time that you do something to a tree to weaken it, it just makes then the next problem that I have has become an additional problem.
And if those are if that's kind of fresh, too, you've got an issue of potentially oak wilt.
And insects will transmit diseases into that tree and those fresh wounds. So that could be an issue as well. And as far as acorns, it may simply not be an old enough tree to be producing acorns.
So it can take more than 15 years then.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Sure. There you have it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. And Tammy, your turn in Afton, Minnesota. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I actually have an oak tree question, too.
Okay.
We believe it is a red oak, and it leaves out beautifully every year. But then come July, late July, early August, we get a perfect ring around the tree in the grass, about 15 feet out from the trunk. And then the leaves kind of dry up and fall off. And someone told us it was oak wilt, but it doesn't match any of the descriptions of oak wilt.
No, it doesn't.
No, it's not oak wilt.
And we do have black walnuts around it, but I went online and found out supposedly that, you know, oak trees are fairly hardy to toxicity from walnuts.
Yeah, that they've pretty much have evolved together, so that shouldn't be an issue. When you say a ring, are you talking like all the grass in a circle around the trunk is dying, or?
Yeah, it's just bizarre, and it's about where the leaves. It's just
on the drip
the
line.
Canopy.
Just on the drip line.
Yep.
And but now is all the grass from the drip line to the trunk dead, or is
no?
It's
about a foot wide in circumference. It's the most bizarre thing, and we didn't know if the roots were girdling. It's just this foot wide ring around the tree.
And how old is the tree, or how big is it? Tall is it?
Well, I'm looking at it. I'm a terrible guess at height. I would say the trunk, though, is probably 24 inches in diameter.
That's a good size tree.
Yeah, that's a good size tree.
Yeah.
And then it seems
and it
to recover.
It bears acorns every year. It does have quite a few dead branches on it, and more of them in the shade. Now, it does have shade throughout the afternoon and evening because of the tall black walnuts on the west side of it.
Yeah, the ring's a mystery to me.
That's a mystery, yeah.
My suggestion is contact your local cooperative extension office and have them put you in touch with somebody that's a pathologist or even in your area, somebody that's a good, reputable arborist and have the arborist come out and take a look at that.
Yeah, you might want a certified arborist come out and take a look at it.
Yeah, this isn't something I'd want to take a stab in the dark at and then tell you something wrong.
The leaves kind of pointy a little bit.
The leaves
rounded,
they kind of dry, but they don't look anything like what you see in oak wilt.
Yeah.
Oak
wilt it'd be dead.
Extension, but Minnesota isn't so fortunate as Wisconsin is to have a good extension program.
I just wondered if...
Yeah, then you might want to find a good arborist in your area and have them come out and take a look. That's a stumper.
Yeah, I've never heard that. Actually, if you've got a picture, if you can... if you can take a digital photo or two and send it to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Diagnostic Lab at the University of Wisconsin, he'd probably love to see it.
So one more question then. Should we wait to call the arborist until that ring develops? Because it's not there now, and it won't develop usually until July, late July.
Yeah, that's because, again, you might say something to an arborist, and they won't really have any idea until they actually see it. Unless it's something that is more common than I think it is. And
I've never heard of it.
It's a new one for me.
Yeah, it's it looks kind of cool, but I think it's hurting the tree, whatever it is.
Well, it's something that's happening on the drip line, something coming off the water, coming off. I don't know. That's
Nothing beats actually being able to see things. I mean, we sit here and we're trying to diagnose problems for folks, and there's no way to better be able to tell people what's going on to actually get on site and see these things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I love your program.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. But an email from Mimi, and this goes back to the chestnuts and someone who had wanted to try and get his chestnuts to grow, to turn into chestnut trees. She says, for American chestnuts, overwinter them in barely damp peat moss in the refrigerator, not the freezer. Then pot them up in March or April, by which time they will have grown a taproot, and then set them outside, very well protected from deer, rabbits, voles, after late frost.
Sounds like great advice.
And some great advice here today from Ed Lyon. Ed is director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, located on the UW-Madison campus, celebrating their 20th birthday this year. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, located on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus, our guest today. He also runs his own consulting business. It's called Spellbound Garden Writing and Consulting. And for that, you can just go to spellboundgarden.com, spellboundgarden.com. Lots of questions coming up. I know we have questions about trees. We've got, there's a lot of issues with trees this year. Maple trees, oak trees, apple trees, white oak trees. But we've also are willing and able, at least Ed is, to take your questions about flowers of all kinds as well. And if you have a question, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'll be back with Ed right after this look at the news. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, located on the UW-Madison campus. Questions for Ed, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. And Linda in Madison has been waiting a while, so let's go to Linda. Linda, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Continuing with the tree theme, I have a 8-year-old maple in my backyard and happened to go out there a couple days ago to check on a little nest of wrens that I have in the tree and looked up and noticed that the leaves are covered with black spots. The tree seems to be growing because there's new growth on the ends of the branches, but, the black spots are new to me.
Yeah, this is the same anthracnose that we've been discussing in the show. Again, it's a big issue this year. You're going to see a lot of anthracnose, particularly on the maples that are particularly susceptible to it. Again, same suggestions. Make sure any of the leaves that drop, you get
rid of them.
Yep, get rid of them. Again, it's probably not worth your effort to go out there and do fungicides on these larger trees. As things dry up, that problem will disappear. But again, if you're not getting rid of those spores, you get another spring like this one, you'll see a repeat of it.
Okay. All right. I hadn't heard that earlier, so sorry for the repeat.
Oh, no problem. That's okay. Other people have been waiting online maybe with the same questions again. So it's okay, Linda. Thanks.
Thanks much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Jules in Montello, we turn to you now. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for Garden Talk. It's great. I listen to it often.
Thank you.
I have a question for Ed regarding apple trees. I've got two apple trees I grown from seed. One is a Macintosh and the other I don't remember. Last year, it flowered and then I had apples on it, but I've never sprayed it. I was wondering if Ed could tell me whether or not it's too late to start spraying to prevent, bugs and worms in the apples.
Yeah, it's probably late for this season. Yeah. So you're probably looking at what apples you will get this year will have those issues. And then just, you know, figure that next year you'll be more on top of it in a timely fashion. The good news is everything that's fruiting this year seems to be extremely heavy in fruit.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that anything that you put on now is probably most likely you've put the money into it, and it's not going to be extremely effective for you.
Is it too late to bag some of those?
No, you could probably do that.
Uh-huh.
Just put some bags around them and some paper bags and tie them off and just experiment with a couple and see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What would be the proper schedule to begin and spraying, you know, throughout the season?
Yeah, the best bet is go online and look for some of the extension information. They're wonderful for putting out publications that would, especially it will vary according to what area you're in, and that you'll find bulletins that the extension office puts out that will give you and what things to use, and if you have an extension office near you, find out some of their publications.
Yeah, the online, you can go to the University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store. So the Learning Store is where the bulletins all reside online, and you could just go right online and go to publications at the Learning Store, and you'll get that information. I know they've got publications on there.
Absolutely. They're a great resource and underutilized.
Thank you very much for that call. We have an email from Tom in La Crosse. Planted three colors of yarrow together over the past couple of years. They've all turned to one color, pink. I also had this happen with hybrid lilies turning from white to orange. What's up?
You're either getting some reversion in those plants, or another thing that could be happening is one particular yarrow is overtaking the other two. Again, it's kind of hard to say without actually getting out there and looking at the plants, but it certainly is not beyond comprehension that you're getting some reversion back to maybe an original color in those plants as well. It may not be the actual original plant, particularly in bulbs.
Yeah.
They may be producing new bulbs that have reverted back to maybe an original color.
And Mary Jo from Abrams, Wisconsin, responding to the caller from Afton, Minnesota, Mary says, you do have a good extension system in your state. You look up www.myminnesotawoods.org for lots of help with trees. Myminnesotawoods.org for lots of help with trees. It's quite interactive, and she could send pictures of her particular problem. So there you have it.
And I would say that's probably true. The Midwest is a particularly rich and strong extension resources.
Yep. Gloria in Wales, on to you now. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for your help, first of all.
Sure.
And I want to say the gardens are just spectacular. If nobody's seen the Centennial Gardens in Madison.
Thank you so much.
My question is about white oaks. I'm fortunate enough to live on a property that has a lot of trees, but the white oaks are going through some distress. I called a certified arborist. He proposed a macro infusion of fertilizer with iron in the fall, or I guess that's one treatment, and then the fertilization was an oak blend for chlorosis with iron sulfite and organic soil conditioners. It's going to be very expensive. Does this sound like it's a good diagnosis for this?
Well, if you have chlorosis, you're going to know it, and the oaks that are particularly susceptible to that are pin oaks. And you said you had white oaks. Are these, you know, native white oaks?
I believe so. He thought they're huge trees. He thought they were a couple hundred years old.
Yeah, I certainly don't want to second guess a professional, but you would know if you had severe chlorosis that would need treatment with iron. The leaves will get very, very almost gold or bright yellow, and the veins stand out very green in those leaves. Now, if your leaves are colored you know, normally for an oak, then I wouldn't think chlorosis is the problem that you have. Again, I'm not trying to second guess a professional, but I wouldn't even treat an oak for chlorosis unless that whole tree is I recently ran across one right here in Madison that was so gold. I thought, oh my God, that almost looks like a new cultivar of a golden oak. That's when you really get concerned about chlorosis.
Well, just like with doctors or dentists or anything else, sometimes a second opinion.
Yeah, exactly. So
look for another certified arborist in your neighborhood and have them take a look, Gloria.
And oaks could have any other issues. There's oak tatters. There's you know, the oak wilt. There are a number of issues. So you do want to make sure before you're putting a large amount of money and an investment in it that it's an accurate diagnosis.
All right, I will do that. The leaves are more of a chartreuse color than the gold.
Well, that's even chartreuse that's showing some chlorosis then, because they should be a nice, good, rich, dark green if they don't have any issues.
He's probably got that right.
Yeah, he may be accurately diagnosing. Now, is this happening every single year?
You know, I think it's been I've noticed it. I have lost one already, and it's just kind of gradual. I notice they're not as thick and lush as they used to be, and the leaf color is changing.
And again, chlorosis is highly unlikely to kill the plant, but what it will do is every year it's a lack of chlorophyll, obviously, and it's going to weaken it. And then like I've said
something
else comes along, weakens it, and something then eventually kills it. So again, what you're doing is by correcting that chlorosis is adding to the overall health of the tree, so something even more devastating then doesn't take hold and take it out altogether.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I'll get a second opinion and do some more homework on this, too.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Brian in Watertown, Steve in Lake Geneva, excuse me. Steve, hello to you.
Hi, guys. Hey, I have a suggestion or an idea on that ring around the drip line of the tree.
I was hoping somebody would.
Yeah, you know, I pick wild mushrooms throughout the year, mostly in the fall, and I've only seen it really in the fall. It'd be like a ring. I wouldn't necessarily see any mushrooms there, but it would look like the grass is dead.
Yeah, I had thought when she said a ring, immediately you think of fairy rings.
Exactly.
But if she had a fairy ring, you'd actually see mushrooms.
Yeah.
But she may not, if she isn't paying real good attention, I've seen mushrooms grow in the evening. They come up in the evening around a couple of trees in McHenry, Illinois, actually. And then next morning, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know nobody picked them. I'm sure they just all wilted. They're all... And what if it was a fungus that was under the soil that just didn't flower?
Yeah, and a fairy ring is not caused by any mushroom that would be fungal that would actually hurt the tree. And there are some that would. But her saying that, she might think that then that's adding to whatever the problem of the tree, and it very well might not be. It might be something else, and because she sees the ring. Yeah, so that I had thought a fairy ring when she said that. But then when she didn't mention any mushrooms, I thought, this sounds a little bit different.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I've seen it often enough that right away when she said it, it just reminded me of so many things that I've seen.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for your show, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Good information there. Brian in Watertown, now we go to you. Hi, Brian.
Hi, yes, Larry. Thanks a lot for the show.
You bet.
I've got a question. About 7 years ago, I bought 5-acre oak grove that was cow's pasture its whole life, and it's got numerous mature white oaks and mixed hickories. And now I've been, the last 3 or 4 years, we've been losing a couple oaks every year.
Oh, boy, that sounds
like oak wilt. It's
completely
dying.
Yeah.
And when I do end up cutting them down, they're hollow on the side.
That sounds an awful lot like oak wilt. And you see that an awful lot in our area here. You go out in western Dane County and some of the areas, you will actually see these oaks out in what used to be pasture land, and they're dying, and then the ones that are surrounding them, and it's sort of like a gradual process outward. And the single most common disease right now that's taking oaks out is oak wilt.
They're usually...
And is there anything I can do to...
Again, I would call an arborist, have them come out, assess the degree of damage. They can, you know, give you ideas of things that you might be able to do. There's various things right now that they'll recommend. It's going to be
expensive.
A wide range of expense, yes.
could be expensive, but if you want to save them, you definitely should get an arborist out there.
Yeah, kudos to anybody that has acreage like this, and they're putting the investment into saving these trees. It's unfortunate. It's fairly rampant now. It's a big problem, and it can be fairly expensive to save them.
And good luck. Thank you very much, Brian, for calling. Jim in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an herb garden. I have probably 20 or so different perennial herbs. And I noticed the fungal that you've been talking about on some of the herbs, like on spearmint and oregano. If I cut that off, are the herbs that don't have that fungal on them, are they okay to eat?
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. That it's not going to harm you in any way. And with herbs, it's much easier because, like you said, you can simply go in there, cut that out. And perennials, very much the same. I mentioned before that my pulmonarias all have powdery mildew right now. What I do is I go right in there, I cut off all of that vegetation right now, and what will happen, and then I dispose of that so that those spores aren't there any longer. Those pulmonarias will actually grow right back up like your herbs will do. What hopefully is going to happen, they're going to be growing back out as we get into sort of a hotter, drier kind of a summer. And that's one of the best ways to help them recover from that.
Yeah, the experiment did recover nicely. Also, I have found, this seems very odd, sometimes on my herbs, oregano, I will find under the leaves, not very often, but what appears to be almost like soap suds.
Spittle bug.
Yeah, it sounds like probably a spittle bug. It's a little.
I don't see any eggs or bugs or anything. It's just like
you don't in a with no. spittle. It looks like somebody actually spit on the underside of your plant.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. They're relatively harmless.
Okay.
But
that's
would be
pretty
my,
much
yeah that'd
what
be
it
my
is.
Guess. Yeah, and they'll wash right off.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. Judy emails and wonders if it's too late to prune her lilacs this weekend. It's been about 2 weeks since blooming ended.
Probably not. You're starting to get to the tail end of when I would probably do it, but you should be fine. Now, these are, I'm assuming, common lilacs, which bloomed and finished fairly recently. So you should be fine.
And Maggie in Blue River, on to you. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. Leave it to a birder to leap in and defend the sapsucker. I've spent a lot of time, probably 30 years, observing trees and how they handle sapsucker boring, and I don't think it's a death sentence at all for any tree. I've never seen one really suffer from it. And I about 25, 30 years ago, I planted a spruce, and it was, you know, my darling spruce out there, and a sapsucker got working on it, and I was horrified, and I went out and tried to tie things around there and do all kinds of things to keep the sapsucker off. Anyway, that tree is healthy and growing and still robust. And I spend quite a bit of time in the forest doing bird surveys, and I always look at trees that have sapsucker holes in them, and they all seem to be doing fine. So please don't call it a death sentence for a tree, because I don't want people to get upset about my beloved sapsucker.
Well, and you will notice we did not call it a death sentence. What we said is it can open it up to infection for other types of diseases. That's only obvious. They're making a very fresh hole in a tree into that cambium layer, and there are insects that will vector diseases that can go in through those holes. What we did say is it can make that tree weaker or provide a weakness so that other issues, like I said, it's rarely any one instance that kills a tree unless it's something as bad as verticillium will or oak will, something of that nature. Each and everything that happens to that tree does provide, you know, just another weakness that ultimately, if you have a lot of different things that are happening to that tree, then can ultimately kill it.
And that sapsucker was after an oak tree, a red oak, and oaks, I mean, that's, you are not supposed to prune or to touch an oak tree. What is it, April through fall, like somewhere?
Right, till they go dormant. And unfortunately, oaks are extremely susceptible right now.
So we zeroed in a little bit on that too, but You're right, Maggie. Thank you very much for calling. I like sapsuckers too.
Oh, I like all birds.
Thank you too.
And when they're doing it on something like an Austrian pine, that's producing a resin that comes out and almost protects that tree right away. Anytime we're talking about a tree as susceptible as an oak, though, it becomes a whole different issue.
Thanks again, Maggie. Tim in Minocqua, on to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live up in the northern part of the state, and I will have, I guess, what you would describe as a Northwoods front yard. I believe that the original owner probably just came in and cut a few trees out of the yard and left the stumps behind and then began mowing it. So what I've got is, a front yard with a few old stumps in it, and it's very uneven. What I'm hoping to do is just kind of level it out a little bit. I don't want a fancy yard, but I do want to have a place where you can walk without stepping in pits and holes. So I did originally, or just recently now, I had someone come in and pull those stumps out. And I've also then been delivered some black dirt. But I guess my question mostly pertains to the trees that are still in that yard. When the stumps were pulled, there was a lot more disruption to the yard than I thought, and I'm just worried how much damage I might be doing to the rather large trees that I still want to keep in my front yard.
A lot of that's going to depend on what those trees are. Some trees are going to be a lot more tolerant of having disruption around their root systems. Back to oaks again, if they happen to be oaks. Oaks do not tolerate a lot of disruption around their root systems, whereas other trees, you could do all kinds of disruption around them, and it's not really probably going to harm them. Is it a mix of trees, or is there a predominant tree that you have there that you're concerned about?
It's a Northwoods mix. So I've got, a large oak or two. I've got some beautiful big white pines. I've got some great big red pines. And some smaller maples.
Again, it's going to depend on how close they got into the root systems of those other trees.
You're going to have to be careful, too, about putting a lot of black dirt over the top of the roots of some of those trees.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do more than 3 or 4 inches at a time. Because, again, you're in essentially almost suffocating the root systems of the existing trees. What I would definitely do is, particularly this year, if we get into a dry summer, make sure you supplement the water to those trees, because if you've done any kind of damage to their root systems, they need some time to recover. You don't want them to go through drought stress. Certainly using a nice good layer of mulch will help with some moisture retention as well and some recovery. In many cases where I don't advocate a lot of fertility, you might also help those trees with a very low-grade, maybe time-release fertilizer, although we're getting kind of late in the season to use even a 3-month time release. But you might do that right in the spring. Find maybe a 10-10-10 time-release fertilizer and just try to stimulate some root growth and get these trees that you're worried about, make sure they don't go through drought and help their health out that way.
Well, up here we have been in a 7 or 8 year severe drought.
Yeah, then keep the water to them, because that's probably the single biggest thing you'll do to stress those trees. It's something. Whenever those of us with annual gardens and perennial gardens, we get into drought areas, we're out there watering, but we never do our mature trees, because we think, once the tree is mature and grown, it just doesn't need the same care as all these other plants. And that's just not true. Current research, we used to tell people that the roots of a tree went out to the drip line. Well, that is so far from the truth. Probably 75% of the root systems of most of the trees we have are within the top 6 inches of the ground, and they go out almost 5 times the width of that tree. So here you have all of that root system, fibrous root system, that's in that shallow amount of our soil. They're stressing for a lack of moisture, much like any of our annuals and perennials were. And they're the last things that we give that kind of care to, even though, they're mature. We've got a substantial investment in them. If they were to die, and to take them down and replace them is even more of an investment than our perennials. So keep up with the water on them.
And thanks very much for that question. And Ed, thank you so much. Boy, the time flew by.
It always does.
You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it very much. Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens on the UW-Madison campus. Get over to those gardens and take a look. They're celebrating their 20th birthday celebration this year. The gardens look wonderful, and you're going to enjoy it. Ed also has his own consulting business, Spellbound Garden Writing and Consulting, and that for that, go to spellboundgarden.com. Just to let you know, Monday, Madison personal trainer Dustin Maher visits us at 11, and then our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, join in to talk about climate and weather. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.